I'm Anna Garcia, host of True Crime News, the podcast. Every week, we bring you in-depth coverage on cases making headlines, as well as those that go under the radar. Tune in for murders that defy explanation, mystery seeking exploration, and shocking secrets that will leave you breathless. Each week, we honor the victims by going beyond the salacious in our search for justice. Crime never stops. And neither do we. Listen to True Crime News, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's 2 a.m.
Welcome back, guys. DGS 104.1 FM KMOX. Happy Thursday. That feels like a Friday. Happy 4th of July to everybody. Dave Hines says that I just chilled his red-hot passion for Charo with the hoser down comment. Brian and Barry both say that Barbara Eden is alive and 93 years old. Which means I got a shot.
Dave.
You do have a shot.
Still got game.
Yeah.
Got time.
Yeah.
Although I wouldn't dally around.
Yeah.
It's a good point.
Yeah.
Don't let grass grow on that one.
No.
Attorney Brad Young is here. Really interesting off-air conversation, first of all, about Koberger. The guys were asking me questions yesterday that I couldn't answer, but you just answered one that I had. Could they have gone farther with the examination? You know, did you kill this person? Yes, I did. Did you enter that house with the intent to kill them? Yes, I did. But you said they could have made him go into his motivations.
Yeah, it's frequently the case that prosecutors, in exchange for taking off the death penalty off the table, that can require a defendant to say why you did it. And in this instance, they didn't do it. They could have done it. They just didn't do it. And I wish I knew why. I don't know if they didn't think of it. You know, Idaho doesn't have a lot of murders. Maybe they're not used to that, the prosecutors. Maybe there was a tactical reason they didn't want to do it. But from the purposes, or rather from the family's perspective, I know if it were one of my kids that were killed, I would want to know, why did you choose my daughter? Why did you choose my son to kill him or her? And even though that's painful to hear, I think that's something that a parent would want to know. Was it just random? Was this an experiment that you were doing for class to see if you could get away with it? Was it random? Had you been stalking them? I mean, I would want to know the answers to those questions. The prosecutors could have required that, but they didn't.
And interestingly, you're one of my most conservative friends, but you are not a death penalty guy.
You know, I'm not. Probably 20, 30 years ago, I was a big proponent of the death penalty. I've probably swapped. I mean, I know I've swapped to the other side. I'm against the death penalty now, not because I'm opposed to the idea of executing someone in exchange for their crime. I don't have any problem with that concept in a vacuum. But the death penalty only serves two purposes, the idea of justice and the idea of deterrence for other people to commit crimes. And if someone's on death row for 20, 25, 30 years, then the eventual execution of that person serves neither a sense of justice, because there's a 20 or 30 year gap between the culmination of that punishment and the conviction, or it doesn't serve as deterrence, because no one's going to say, oh, I'm not going to do this, they might kill me. They're going to say, oh, I might get the death penalty, but I got 20 to 25 years to wait it out. And then the cost is enormous. Now, I'm almost always in favor of lawyers getting paid, so hear me about that. That's never a problem. I never have a problem with lawyers getting paid. But 20 or 30 years on death row, you're just running these appeals, and it doesn't serve any real purpose. So, yeah, I've completely jumped to the other side when it comes on death penalty.
Yeah. What else you got on your mind today?
Well, a couple of things. The Supreme Court just today announced a case they're going to hear next term. And the court dealt with one transgender issue this term. That was the Tennessee law that the state prohibited the use of gender-affirming care when it comes to transgender children. And that went up to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court upheld the state's right to do that. So now they've taken on a case which, of course, is getting tons of attention in the media today, and that is transgender sports. Can a biologically born male compete with biologically born women in women's sports, or for that matter, vice versa, although that doesn't come up very much. So the Supreme Court's taking that issue up about whether a state can institute a ban on transgender sports participation for high school and college. That's going to be the next term. And obviously there's a lot of other issues. And frankly, most of the things the court determines aren't necessarily hot button issues. Out of the 150, 200 cases they take per year, there's a third of those that are hot button issues. lot of them are boring environmental regulations and stuff. But this will certainly be leading the pack for the next term.
Do we have guidance on that? Do we have precedent on it in any way?
Well, I know a lot of people think that the Supreme Court just picks how they're going to rule based upon their political opinions. That's not the case. I mean, we saw this past term a lot of 9-0 opinions and some cases where you had different alliances on the court. But there actually is a methodology. I mean, for example, there's something called, I'm not going to dive too deep in the weeds, but something called strict scrutiny. And in cases when a law infringes on a fundamental right, the government has to prove a compelling interest and that the law is narrowly tailored to achieve that interest. And the whole question is, which of these scrutiny tests do you apply? And if that strict scrutiny would have been applied to Tennessee law, it would have failed. I mean, that they would have struck that law. But the court applied what was called a heightened scrutiny or an intermediate level scrutiny. And so that allowed the law to stand. So that, to me, I think that is extremely significant, because if the court takes that same perspective on this transgender sports or transgender athlete situation, then I think that the states under the Supreme Court review will be allowed to ban transgenders from competing in sports opposite their biological gender.
So historically, what has kicked in a strict scrutiny or an intermediate scrutiny?
Well, like, for example, if it's a fundamental right, if all of a sudden government passed a law that said everyone has to use this type of language or say these types of things or hear words.
Or transgender people can't get married.
Right. Exactly. All right. That would kick it to the highest level, because that's dealing with a fundamental right, and the state has the highest level of scrutiny, meaning that all of the reasons why, it's almost like the beyond a reasonable doubt. I mean, the government has to be 100% in the right, or else the law is going to be stricken. If it's a lower standard, then it becomes easier. The states get more wiggle room, if mm-hmm. it were, or more mm-hmm. leeway to do what they want to do without the Constitution or the Supreme Court stepping in.
So I guess that's the first problem to be solved by the court.
Exactly.
Is this a compelling interest?
Right. Is this an actual
transgender
interest?
People have a compelling right, a fundamental right to play college sports?
Well, actually, it wouldn't be that. It would be, is the law impinging on a fundamental right, meaning is it actually about sex? Because if you look at the Tennessee situation, the court said it's not about gender. It's about age and medical conditions, because it was equally used for men and women. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So it wasn't holding out any specific gender. Now, with the sports situation, I think the argument can be made possibly by those who are wanting to prevent states from banning this, to say it is about gender, because there's not a lot of situations where women are competing against men. It's almost universally biological men who are competing against biological women. And so you could make the case it is about gender. It is about sex. It's not just about age or a medical diagnosis. And if it is about gender, then if that kicks it into the strict scrutiny, I think the state's ability to prohibit transgenders in sports may be non-existent.
I'd be curious if their argument ends up coming down to forgetting gender, but biological advantage, right? I mean, we already have separate sports for men and women for a reason, right? There's a reason there's the NBA and the WNBA, right? Mm-hmm. And that, we know what that reason is, because the dudes are bigger, faster, taller, jump higher, all that. But then there's also, within the sports, for example, in boxing and wrestling, you fight in a weight class. There's a reason you fight in a weight class. There's a reason that a lightweight doesn't fight a heavyweight. It's not a fair fight. And sports are, like, the way sports are structured is about fair competition. And I think the argument is, and the question is, and I think the burden of proof is on the side saying there's no advantage. If there is no advantage, I think fine. But then does this come down to a science question? Well, and does that end up playing into the court side of this?
Yes, it will play into the court side of it, but not so much from the judges having or the justices having to reach answers on science questions, because they're not going to do that.
Right.
But in the case that the court is taking up for the next term, the plaintiff is a biologically born male who has been taking testosterone inhibiting drugs mm-hmm. for 5 years. So his/her position here is, I don't have an advantage because I'm taking these drugs. And so that may remove some of the science, but the court's going to focus on, is there a gender-based discrimination here? If the answer to that is yes, then they're going to apply strict scrutiny. If the court says there's no actual gender discrimination, because being transgender is not in of itself a gender, if there's no gender discrimination, then we're going to apply a lower standard because it's really equally applicable to men or women.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. This is why it's such a... Do we know how old the athlete is that we're talking about, the age of the athlete?
Well, the athlete was in college when the litigation started.
Okay,
athlete is still in college.
So
but
for
it's a
5 years would be after you've gone through puberty, which is another big question in the athletic world, because a male is going to be taller with denser bones, longer arms, longer legs. Those are advantages in certain sports.
Right.
They're advantages.
Thicker muscles.
They're advantages. And even if you're taking the blockers, it doesn't change that those advantages exist. So the example of Leah Thomas at Stanford, who, when competing as a male, was not very competitive, was not a top performer, was on all of those same restrictors, but was still at a huge advantage in the pool against women, against biological women, because Leah Thomas is 6'3" and has really long arms and really long legs. Well, those are advantages in swimming. And they're advantages in things like basketball and volleyball and things along those lines, which is why this is not simple. I wish this was a simple issue, but it's really not a simple issue. You have to be able to prove there's no unfairness involved in it from an athletic standpoint. From a legal standpoint, obviously, Brad's already lined that out.
You're right, Wheels. It is a very complicated situation, especially when you take into account that it's not like Leah Thomas was winning first place every time against these women. It's not like she was just taking home the gold in every single scenario. So, I mean, it's hard to argue that it's like, yeah, she absolutely had an advantage every single time. Well, if that was true, she would always have won first place. There are also women who are 6'3". I mean, it happens in nature. So it's really hard to parse out, like, here's where it's fair, here's where it's not
right.
fair.
And that's why it's hard. That's why I think this has got to be eventually done with science and done by medical professionals, like decided by them and not by the rest of us, because only they can tell us, well, what's the difference in bone density for a 6'3" woman, biologically born woman, versus somebody who's transitioned? What's the actual difference? The parts that can't be reversed with hormone treatment, and then where do we reach that level where it's the same? I think it's not known right now, and it's going to have to come down to science. And unfortunately, the courts are probably going to be forced into. Well, I mean, not forced, but they're going to have to be in this before we know for sure, medically, scientifically, what the actual problem or what the actual solution is.
Fascinating. Great discussion. Thank you, Brad Young. Brad is Mark Reardon today down the hall.
Well, I don't know that I would put it that way, but yeah. I'm filling in.
I apologize. I apologize.
Filling in. Yeah.
History That Doesn't Suck is a legit, hard-hitting American history podcast told through entertaining stories. Join me, Professor Greg Jackson, for History That Doesn't Suck, an Odyssey podcast, available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Guys, DGS 104.1 FM KMOX. Happy Thursday. Pretty day out there, a little on the muggy side. Hold on, I had something.
Uh-oh.
Oh, I know what it was. The best food in the world. The best food that tastes the best and is the most fun, prove me wrong, is room service food.
Never had it.
What?
I know.
Oh, my God, a burger with a tiny little thing of ketchup?
That is pretty sweet.
Oh, you put it outside in the hall when you're done with it?
This ain't my problem anymore.
I'm not sure I've ever been somewhere fancy enough to have room service.
I'm sending you and Megan on a luxury night out, and I'm going to pay for your room service.
You know, I just realized I've never had room service either.
You're going with Megan and
double, you get the adjoining suite.
Get those two queen beds.
You're all in one room.
Yeah.
I get you.
In fact, Wheeler, you're going to be on a cot.
He's on the pull-out couch.
Yeah, he's on the futon.
Nobody needs that.
Wheeler's sleeping in the bathtub.
They're going to wake up like, are those fireworks? Nope. Not fireworks.
Megan's like, there's something with beady eyes in the corner.
We're being haunted by a folklore accurate leprechaun. One of the evil ones.
Right. Not the good ones. There's no pot of gold. He's so swole.
Oh my gosh. I watched the movie Leprechaun when I was way too young.
That'll change you.
That, dude, that messed me up. Yeah. That movie is disturbing. And there's like memes of it, of like leprechaun like showing up in the doorway.
Yeah.
And I cannot scroll fast enough whenever that pops up on the old
terrified
phone.
Terrified just by the story.
What's
like
so
when
funny?
We were kids, you know, just Rumpelstiltskin.
Mm-hmm.
Remember that one?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Is that a thing for you, Wheels?
I know the name. What's the story? I don't know the story.
He was some kind, like, he wasn't a leprechaun.
He was kind of like a leprechaun. He had like a little
guy.
Troll. Yeah.
And didn't he steal kids?
Mm-hmm. He demands your firstborn child.
And you have to guess his name. And I forget how they fooled him. They fooled him
somehow.
Yeah,
they like tricked him into giving up his name.
I remember he was dancing around
Publisher's Clearinghouse or something.
He was dancing around a fire, and he was singing, "My name's Rumpelstiltskin, they're never going to guess." I mean, that's kind of hacky when you really think about it. But just like I had such a Rumpelstiltskin. You know what else screwed me up?
Was he like a full size troll?
No, he was
a
little fella.
He was a little big.
Why don't you just kick him?
You'll never guess my name.
Just
which
kick
is Rumpelstiltskin.
No boot in his chest, man.
There's no kicking leprechauns.
he's like magic.
He like poof magic.
Yeah,
and disappear.
Yes, exactly.
All right,
kick them, they turn into 10 frogs.
I always got him mixed up with Rip Van Winkle.
Oh, yeah. Which, that was creepy, too.
That's
yeah,
a sleepy guy, right?
Yeah, he slept for like 1,000 years or something.
Yeah, you know who he was best friends with?
Hmm.
Johnny Appleseed.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
You know the funny thing about Leprechaun? Because I had the same thing with Freddy Krueger in Nightmare on Elm Street.
Yeah.
Is that when you revisit those movies, you understand those movies are essentially like comedies. Like they're meant to be silly and over the top. I am still, there's nothing in the world I'm more scared of than Freddy Krueger.
Really?
And he's like a jokester. He's like a goofball. He shows up and he does, you know.
Doing bits.
Yeah, he does bits. He does like slapstick stuff. And I'm like, there's nothing scarier to me because that's, I just happened upon it when I was 3 instead of, you know, Barney or whatever.
I saw it when I was a teenager. And you'll remember the scene when he's walking down the alley and
he's
his arms.
Scraping him, yeah.
Oh, my Lord.
Meanwhile, like, Fresh Prince has a song about him.
Right.
Where he, like, does a guest verse rapping alongside Will Smith and DJ Jazzy Jeff.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, this is the scariest thing in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Jennifer Aniston was in the original Leprechaun.
Mm-hmm.
Was that my boy from Willow that played the Leprechaun? Remember him?
Is his name Warwick Davis?
Yes. Yeah, Warwick Davis.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You see, in Tennessee, there's a new law. I don't know if it's a law, if it's proposed, but if teenagers are caught bullying, they lose their driver's license.
Oh, very interesting.
I love that.
Very interesting.
Look, you want to stop bad behaviors, consequences matter.
Mm-hmm. Take something away.
I mean, always been my theory. Always had success, and it worked on me, too. You want me to, when I was 16, if you wanted me to behave, threaten me with taking my car keys. You've been able to see. There's never been. Yeah, it's been a long, long time. You're such a sight. You're looking better than a body has a right to. Don't you know? How We Met Your Mother is the How I Met Your Mother rewatch podcast with me, Josh Radner, and series co-creator Craig Thomas. Follow How We Met Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts. Oh, we're playing with the fire, but we
can't stop this burning desire. This should be another great song to play in the band to pull this off.
You've sold me on this song. I had never really heard it.
Great.
It's really good.
Really good.
Who knew? Donnie Iris.
Yeah, I think that's all he did. Like this one tune, but you know what? He did this one, so good for Donnie. Bernie Miklas joins us. Hello, Bern.
What's going on? I hope everybody's gearing up for a nice holiday weekend.
Absolutely. Bern, I was thinking about you last night. I was watching a TikTok, and I saw your collection of hats, and I bought you a gift. I bought
Ooh.
You a gift.
Ooh.
I went to eBay, and I searched, and I searched, and I found you a beautiful Baltimore, knowing you're from Baltimore, boy, Baltimore Negro Leagues Black Sox hat.
Oh, my gosh. I love that.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You're
very
welcome.
Very, very kind.
So we'll
very, very kind.
Get together for dinner again so I can give it to you.
Well, you're very thoughtful, and I'm not surprised. Thank you, Dave Glover.
I heard in the TikTok I was watching, you were making a very interesting point the other day. The three of us were talking about how the Cardinals could use a star to put butts in the seats and to win a few more games, and you were making the argument they probably need at least two.
Yeah, I mean, they really don't have any stars, and the good players that they have, and I respect those players. I'm not trying to demean them. But we tend to overrate the guys who are pretty good, you know, like Donovan and Wynn. It doesn't mean that, you know, I'm not disparaging them, but I'm just saying if we're realistic about it, they are not stars in the grand way that we view stars in terms of national attention and whatnot. You know, earlier today on the Gas House Gang, Ronja and I had Heidi Watney on from Apple TV Plus, who's going to be doing the game tomorrow at Wrigley Field. And I asked her about the state of the Cardinals because she covered the Cardinals a lot when they were winning and winning and winning and winning when she was working for the MLB Network. And she said, and the quote really resonated with me, and I should have said this myself, but she said, you know, when I look at the Cardinals, they need dudes. They need more dudes. Mm-hmm. In other words, that's the slang way of saying they lack star power. Mm-hmm. You know, and her point is that the really great teams have stars, and you know they're stars. When Albert Pujols and Yadier Molina and Adam Wainwright and Jim Edmonds and Matt Holliday and on and on and on, when they walk into the ballpark, you're like, whoa, this team's got some dudes. You know, yeah. And the Cardinals really don't have many dudes. I don't think they have any big-time dudes. I don't.
What's fascinating, Bernie, look, the dudes are hardest to come by, right? They're either really expensive or you've got to do a great job of drafting and developing, or this team's got to do a better job with the international free agent signings. They haven't had enough impact from that world in the last 7, 8, 9, 10 years. But if you look at the team, like if you added a superstar and then maybe a B-level star to this group, you're a contender for the World Series. Like, you have really all of the good surrounding complementary parts. You're just missing the top end that the other real big World Series contenders have.
No, well, no doubt about it. And I agree with you about the international market. Although I will say they have a couple of guys that are pretty intriguing on the way. They're a long way away. They're teenagers. But that catcher, Rodriguez, and the shortstop, Padilla.
Yep.
I mean, all the prospect evaluators rave about those guys. So we'll see.
Mm-hmm.
But the Cardinals, like Bill DeWitt has told me a bunch of times, the Cardinals should be about stars. The Cardinals have always had stars. They've always had guys that if they weren't Hall of Famers, they were close to it. And Nolan Arenado and Paul Goldschmidt were the latest guys to fit that bill. But now there is a void. You know, Goldie is gone. Arenado's in the twilight of his career offensively. And so this is the first time in a long time where the Cardinals simply do not have a big star playing for their team.
Yeah, and they did try. I mean, you mentioned Goldie and Arenado. They realized that's why they make those trades.
Right.
Because for them, it's not appealing to go into free agency. For example, this coming offseason, if Kyle Tucker's a free agent, he's exactly what we're talking about.
Yeah. Right.
And how much different is your lineup if you have that guy in the middle, but he's going to cost you $400 million in free agency.
And Dave and Wheels, one of the things I said in that video that Dave Glover referred to, and thank you, I made the point that it's harder to get stars now given the way the Cardinals do business, and I'm not knocking them. It's just the way they've always done business. The point is, first of all, back when Walt Jocketty was making trades, I mean, teams would never, most of the time, they just came to the conclusion, well, we're not going to be able to re-sign our guy, so let's get something for him. And they would basically give them away. Jocketty made a lot of trades like that.
Yeah.
Well, smarter front offices don't do that anymore. They don't give guys away. They'll say, well, hey, we'll just play it out, and, you know, if he leaves, he leaves. But if we're going to trade him, we're going to make it worth our while. So it's harder to pull off those deals. The second thing is, the Cardinals have always operated under a what's the word? They're only going to go so far in what they spend on free agents. Bill DeWitt is not going to jump into the pool, you know, where it's going to take $500 million to sign someone, or even $300 million to sign someone. So their avenues, their paths to getting great players is really limited. It's much more limited than it used to be. Because there was a time where, Bill DeWitt could sign Matt Holliday for $120 million, and that was a big deal at the time, and it didn't hurt the Cardinals. It helped the Cardinals a lot, but you're not going to get a player of a Matt Holliday in his peak caliber for $120 million. It's simply not going to happen.
What's fascinating, too, Bern, is, in addition to adding the players that you've mentioned, and, of course, developing Yadier Molina and Albert Pujols, right? That's going to be the path. And when you draft guys with the skill sets and the physical tools of a Jordan Walker, that's the kind of person you need to be able to develop into a star. So
right.
I wonder how much of what we're talking about now moving forward is not only identifying talent, but being able to develop. And the one thing, well, recently pitching has been a problem too, but over time, the one thing that they really haven't developed well is power. I mean, like, who's the last power hitter that came out of the Cardinals organization? And I mean, a real 30 home run a year kind of guy. It's Albert.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I mean, Matt Carpenter was not a 30 home run guy.
He's a great hitter.
He had 25 home run guy who hit a bunch of doubles, and I consider that power.
Sure, I'll count that.
But that's about it. And, and really, listen, I know the All-Star game, it's kind of a joke from the standpoint of who's on the roster, because you got like 30,000 players that can say they were an All-Star in 1 year, because you got guys out of the game, so they have to find replacements. But the Cardinals have not had a homegrown hitter in an All-Star game since Young in 2019. And before that, It was Matt Carpenter. It was Matt Carpenter in 2016. They haven't been able to produce homegrown sort of run-of-the-mill All-Star players in an era where All-Star rosters are greatly expanded.
Do you think, I know we don't know, but is your sense that Weatherholt is a future star?
I think he will be for sure. The only thing, and I'm going to get Wheel's opinion on this, and I don't really care about this. If a guy's a great hitter, he's a great hitter. I don't know that he's going to hit for any type of prodigious power as far as home runs. That's not really his profile. But if you want a guy that can hit 330 and just smash a lot of doubles, triples, things like that, with a decent amount of home runs, I mean, that's your guy. I think he's going to be a star player, though. Maybe not the power profile guy. But with that, sometimes the power profile guys strike out a bunch. Weatherholt doesn't,
no.
And he walks a ton.
Yeah.
He's always on base.
Weatherholt is the thing that people call a pure hitter, right? Like that's what scouts have always said, just a pure hitter, really smooth stroke, knows the strike zone. I think he'll hit home runs, Bern. I think your numbers are probably about right, because I've categorized it having watched him. He's not the same physically, but he's a similar approach and a similar style of hitting to a guy like Chase Utley. So I think if he hits his peak potential, if Weatherholt maxes out his ability, he's probably a guy like Chase Utley. Now he could also have a floor that's maybe more of a just a good everyday player, right? But, I mean, if he hits his peak, Utley was a star. I mean, he could be that, but that's if he's 100% of what he can be.
Yeah, you look at Utley's career, man, MVP votes in a bunch of seasons, a lot of all-star bids. Let me look at his home run.
He's a borderline Hall of Famer. I mean,
well, yeah, I think I personally think he should be in the Hall of Fame. He had 330 home run seasons, another one with 20. Do you really think Weatherholt's going to be a 30 home run guy?
If he maxes out his abilities, I don't know that he will, but I would say, I wonder if you look at Utley's numbers, the first 6-7 years of his career were a lot better than the rest of it in terms of power production and all of that. But I would probably peg Weatherholt as that regular 20 homer guy with 40 doubles. Maybe a speedier version of Matt Carpenter.
I'll take it. Do you guys think that the Dodgers are eyeballing Arenado with Muncy going down?
That's a tough question. I think they probably are looking for better ways to spend their money. But Wheels, I guess I can't entirely rule it out. But I just get the Arenado stuff, because we're into July now and there's 20,000 blogs, people making up fantasy trades. So I don't know how to really gauge the interest in him. But I tell you what, I think Arenado would be a classy upgrade for a lot of teams, as long as you realize he's going to be a league average hitter, but he's going to give you exquisite defense, and he's going to get some big hits, and he's going to be a great teammate. So, you know, he's got some virtues for sure.
Yeah, I think some of it depends on exactly what the diagnosis comes up being for Max Muncy. Yeah. You know, if he's like definitely out for the year, could easily see the Dodgers figuring it out because they're all in right now. They'll deal right with that. But and we know with what I would say 99.9% certainty, Byrne, that he would accept a deal to the Dodgers.
Oh, for sure.
I think that, you know, you go into your hometown, you're going to the favorite team, and you can plug in and play. It's possible, but I still think even to the Dodgers, the Cardinals probably have to come to grips with having to eat money. And do they want to move off of this player if they're, you know, tied for the last wild card spot come trade deadline time?
You know, and if I could throw this in real quick, another reason why the Dodgers might be more interested in Arenado than what we would think is because the Dodgers are light years ahead of every other major league organization in terms of their analytics and how they can find ways to make players better. Mm. Albert Pujols went to the Dodgers. Mm-hmm. He was done. He was done in Anaheim.
Cooked.
And they came up with some stuff and showed him, Albert, you can actually have a revival, but this is what you have to do, and this is what we're going to help you with. Brent Brown was one of those guys who helped him with it. David Fries said when he went to the Dodgers after leaving Pittsburgh, and he wasn't very good in Pittsburgh the last couple of years, he was reborn because the Dodgers gave him all this information that made him, you know, kind of reach his maximum level performance. Tommy Edman has said the same thing. It's unbelievable all the stuff they give us to make us better. Hmm. So Arenado, and also if you put him in that lineup, he doesn't have to be the hero.
No.
Yeah. And he puts a lot of pressure on himself. You let him fit into that lineup and they do what they do, which is to give him tremendous information that he can translate into better hitting. Watch out.
Byrne, have a great holiday weekend and tell us about Saliga.
I'll be happy to. And you too. Have a great weekend, everybody.
Welcome back, DGS on KMOX. Happy Thursday. Happy 4th of July weekend. Throwback Thursday, Rach?
Absolutely. I have a great Throwback Thursday for you guys today. Would you like to start with kind of the traditional Throwback Thursday that has a ton of cool movie openings? Or would you like to start with some celebrity deaths that happened on July 3rd.
Yeah, let's go dark.
All right, let's start out dark here. 56 years ago in 1969, Brian Jones of the Rolling Stones drowned in his swimming pool. The coroner cited high levels of alcohol in his blood. He was 27 years old.
I was just going to say, wasn't he one of the 27ers?
Yeah.
That is correct. Another member of the 27 Club, Jim Morrison, 54 years ago in 1971, Jim Morrison died from heart failure in his bathtub in Paris. Hmm. Were you going to say something, Wheels?
Wheels. You know, it's like heart failure, but grunted. I mean, we all know exactly what that's the result of.
Mm-hmm.
Why you got to sound like my dad?
Being too cool.
I think we all know what he died of.
I mean,
I think we know.
He died of having girl hair.
I saw the movie.
He died of menstruations, what he died of.
Is not what I said. I was thinking of the drugs.
36 years ago in 1989, Jim Bacchus died of pneumonia at age 76. He was Thurston Howell III on Gilligan's Island.
And Mr. Magoo.
The voice of Mr. Magoo.
He was?
Yeah.
I mean, I knew he was Thurston Howell III.
Yeah.
So, how old was he when he was Thurston Howell?
Oh.
27.
All right, he died in 1989 at age 76, so he was probably 56.
Sounds right.
Oh, my God.
And his wife, Lovey, was much older.
Really?
Yeah,
yeah, she was actually
20
yeah.
years older.
Yeah.
32 years ago in 1993, Hall of Fame pitcher Don Drysdale died of a heart attack at age 56.
Don Drysdale has some of the greatest old school stories. Like he mm-hmm. was the West Coast Bob Gibson mm-hmm. as far as like drilling people and being hardcore and all that. And I forget who it was, but it was another star player. He drilled him with a pitch. And then as he was walking first, asked him if he wanted the bruise to be autographed. Which is like,
oh, man,
that's legendary.
I thought it was really interesting on my Ken Burns baseball doc that the first collective bargaining attempt ever was Koufax and Drysdale were on the same team. Mm-hmm. And they said, we're only going to negotiate together. And they waited them out. And they lost. So they didn't get good contracts.
No.
But that was the first attempt at any sort of, like, organizing.
Yeah. When you know the history of how, you know, like, professional athletes across the board were treated.
Oh, yeah.
And you're like, people complain now, like, oh, the players have too much power. Well, good. Because past players were basically just commodities to be tossed aside and treated however a team owner wanted to treat them.
One last celebrity death for you, then we'll get into some movie openings. 13 years ago in 2012, Andy Griffith died at 87 from a heart attack in his home in North Carolina.
I think we all know what it was.
87.
All right. So July 3rd, July 4th weekend, typically a pretty big movie weekend, movie openings. 40 years ago in 1985, the first Back to the Future movie was released. Okay, nobody has anything to say. 34 years ago in 1991, Terminator 2 Judgment Day was released.
All right.
That's a fun one.
That was cool. That technology at the time, you're like, what?
You're like, dang.
Liquid metal? What in the world?
29 years ago in 1996, Will Smith's Independence Day opened in theaters.
Oh, yeah.
Hardcore love that movie.
Stone Cold classic.
That is a great movie.
Agreed.
They made it tongue-in-cheek. Like, they know it's being silly, but that's what makes it great.
I can't talk about this film without saying this, though, and I've said it so many times. The dumbest thing in movies ever is when, what's-his-face, the crazy one, Randy Quaid.
Yeah.
And we've seen the aliens. We're fighting the aliens.
Yeah.
And he's like, I'm a pilot. And he's like, I was taken up by one of these alien ships. They're all like, what?
Yeah.
That's
right.
It's like, there's one right there.
Yeah, everybody's like, there's a spaceship right above them. And they're like, get a load of this guy.
Hello, boys.
Speaking of Will Smith, 23 years ago in 2002, Men in Black 2 was released.
Another Stone Cold classic.
Yeah, love the Men in Black movies.
Yeah, those are good.
18 years ago in 2007, they released the first Transformers film.
Less of a classic.
That one was not as bad as everyone that followed it in the Transformers thing.
I think that's the only one I saw.
And it looks cool. Like, it looks cool. I think that's kind of the fun part of it. You know, but then you're like, okay, no story.
What an 18 years it's been for Shia LaBeouf.
Yeah.
I mean, he was on top of the world when they released that movie.
Mm-hmm.
And 5 years ago in 2020, Disney Plus released Hamilton, basically just a recording of the stage play. Very nice.
Cried like a baby when I saw it.
It's great.
Yeah, really
piece of art.
You will definitely cry watching it.
Mm. Some of us will.
Okay, if one
more. Some of us are not going to see it.
I did.
You don't want to watch the rapping musical, Wheels?
You could just say any musical and I am out.
I think you would enjoy Hamilton. Mm, it's so different.
There's so many musicals he would enjoy if he
wanted. I didn't expect to enjoy Hamilton.
He likes music.
I do.
And he likes movies.
I mean, if there's a heavy metal one, fine.
There's lots of them.
Sweeney Todd, is that a
show me the Judas Priest musical?
Not really. You can watch Spinal Tap. That's kind of a musical.
That's funny. It's a good movie.
In a way.
South Park was a musical. I like that one. Does that count?
Yeah.
Maybe that'll come to the Muni soon and we can all take a field trip.
The Recap Show is an inside look into the world of global soccer and women's sports. Follow and listen to The Recap Show wherever you get your podcasts.